paid
260 euros for a pair of Crocs, man.
Those shoes pretty much broke my foot.
It's only going downhill from here.
What up, guys? This is Josh.
And this is Fobs. And this is the Kickback Pod.
Yo, 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 we are back. Episode 27, back at it. And this time, there's two of us. We're back at it again. But I also wanted to say shout out to Fabian. Shout out to Fabian for holding it down for the pod last week. Did it by himself. I listened to it, man. I got to ask you, man, have you been like watching CNN quite often?
No, I actually never watched the news. Why?
You never watch the news? I feel like you have a solid career ahead of you if you choose to become like a news broadcaster. You know, like that person who reads the evening news.
Yeah, like reads off the teleprompter.
Yeah, exactly, man. Like you sounded like you just went through that news like it was nothing. Like you've been doing it your whole life, man. It was.
You know, I've been kind of doing it with you for the last year, so I guess I had good practice. But you know, obviously, super happy you're back because you know, like I said, it was okay doing it on my own, but I much prefer doing it in the dynamic duo, JD and Fobs, the dream team. So welcome back. I hope you're feeling better.
Definitely. Yeah, thanks for holding it down for us and for the pod. And yeah, I'm feeling better, thankfully. Of course, if you guys didn't already know, I did unfortunately contract COVID. So yeah, I got firsthand experience. I tried to dodge it. I honestly thought I would be able to go through the whole pandemic without catching it. But yeah, unfortunately ended up getting it. And it's a bit overhyped, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, we spend a lot of time being worried about it. And then, yeah, like that first day is absolutely terrible. And that was the day we were supposed to record. So I just couldn't even get out of bed for like the first 2 days. So yeah, it was really bad. But after that, it's just like a normal cold, man. It's just like you cough a little bit. You get like boogers in your nose. And that's about it. It's super chill, man. The first 2 days are terrible, but then it's chill. And now I'm glad I have like natural immunity to it. So that's good.
Yeah, on top of your vaccinations. But yeah, I mean, great to hear that you're feeling better. And you obviously took advantage of the post-COVID time, and you were in London on the weekend, right? Like what did you get up to there?
Yeah, I did. So well, of course I tested negative first before I get canceled on here.
Of course.
So yeah, I did actually go to London this past weekend, and it was pretty awesome. For one of the reasons why it was pretty cool was because I almost felt like I traveled back in time. Because it was kind of like London, basically, it was kind of like COVID didn't exist over there because they basically stopped all the mask requirements and any kind of COVID requirement was like, it was not an obligation. Like you could wear a mask if you want to, you could quarantine. Even if you were positive, you can technically like go outside over there. So there was like absolutely no restrictions there. And it felt super weird, like walking into like a supermarket and or like anywhere, like a shop or whatever, and like nobody saying put on your mask. Like it was, and going on to the public transport not wearing masks, like that was pretty cool. Like I haven't felt that in like a few years, so it was it felt like going back in time a little bit.
Were there people wearing masks though? Like I don't know how it is in London. I'm assuming that maybe there's some people that are still ultra careful even if they don't have
there were still people wearing it, like on the apparently, like it's highly encouraged to wear the mask on public transport over there. But from what I observed, I would say only like maybe 30% of the people were wearing masks. Like most people were just not. I guess people were just kind of tired of the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, it was cool, man. Of course, London. I love London. I watched the Super Bowl while I was there. Shout out to Cincinnati Bengals. You guys don't know much about my fanhood when it comes to the Cincinnati Bengals, but I've basically been like a big time Bengals fan for like 15 years now. Since I was very young, I was supporting the team, and I've never seen them make even like AFC championship game or anything like that. Like they made it to the Super Bowl last year. They only had 4 wins. This year they made it to the Super Bowl. Shout out Joe Burrow, aka Joe Shiesty. Yeah, man, he came so close to bringing it home. It was really tough to watch them lose, but team did a good job.
I mean, it's such a random team to support, right? I mean, I think you said in a previous episode that I think you supported them because of Chad Ochocinco, right?
And yeah, I was like, Chad Ochocinco was like the guy who got me into football, right? So I became the fan of the team back then. And also I really like their uniforms. Like, I love their tiger stripe uniforms. And that was also one kind of what like drew me into the team. And then I just kind of became obsessed with them. I had like 5 or 6 different jerseys growing up of the Bengals. So yeah, it was really cool to see them in the Super Bowl, but yeah, tough loss. But we'll get them next year. We'll get them next year. I have a good feeling. They just need a better offensive line, and next year they can win it all.
I was reading, like, I haven't kept up with any of that stuff since I left the US, but you know, it was kind of like the Rams were that superstar team built with like big expensive players kind of in important positions. And the Bengals were built much more organically, like through the draft and like, you know, that kind of stuff. Because also, like, I don't know who goes to Cincinnati, right? Like of the big free agents. Like if you have the choice, you're obviously going to like a big market or something like that. But because they've built it organically or somewhat organically, that they're set up better for the future, right? So that if one of the two teams were to make it to the Super Bowl again, next year, the more likely team is the Bengals, from what I've read.
I think so. Definitely. They have a solid core in place. But you know what was funny? Like, the amount of people, first of all, you know, like, no other event during the year has more money riding on it than the Super Bowl, the amount of bets that are into that game, right? And there were so many people that lost so much money because of that missed a point after.
You know, the field goal, they went for the 2 points, right?
And then the Rams had a touchdown, and then they messed up the point after. So basically, they only ended up winning the game by 3 points instead of 4. And the Vegas odds for that game were Rams by 4. So a lot of people had so much money on the Rams, including Drake. Drake had $2 million on the Rams to win. Damn. They did win, but they only won by 3. So yeah, a lot of people lost money because of that one missed kick. So that's crazy, man. Crazy.
That's an insane amount of money to be putting on any game. But I guess, Drake, you know, man. Drake has a lot of it. So I mean, have you seen his house? It's fucking ugly, but it's expensive, that's for sure.
I've stood literally outside his house. Because like, if you go to Toronto, you can actually on Google Maps Google Drake's house. And like you can just drive there, and I actually drove there.
I think I've read somewhere, like I heard that it's become a tourist destination as well. Like, yeah, a lot of people are doing that.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
there were so many people driving by. Like, I wasn't the only one.
But speaking of crazy things, and you know, big people in an industry, Kanye West has been going crazy on Instagram as well.
Oh beefing. My god! Or it's what not is even a going
beef,
on?
Right? Like. Because like, to beef, I think it needs to be both sides, right? And I think Pete Davidson's not beefing with Kanye. I think it's just all Kanye pretty much embarrassing himself. Like, what was it, like a couple of days ago or on Sunday even, he was like, yo, I'm taking Kid Cudi off Donda 2. Like, that dude's disloyal, whatever. I mean, come on, man. What are your thoughts on that?
Dude, I can't. Honestly, man, I've been a big-time Kanye defender, like, my whole life. I'm like team Kanye all the way, right? And it's been hard, man. It's been hard watching him this past week, because like, I really can't defend the guy anymore. The first thing that I thought was really ridiculous was that whole Billie Eilish thing.
Oh, that was so dumb too. I mean, yeah, he's just picking fights with everyone now.
It's you know what's the funniest thing about his Instagram page right now? You know how like it seems like every day now he keeps deleting his posts?
Yeah.
So like every day it's like a whole new storyline with like 5 or 6 posts about that story, and then he'll delete it all and like the next day do like a completely different story.
Maybe that's the point. Like, he's not an idiot, right? I think he's doing a lot of this on purpose too. But at the same time, if he really does want Kim Kardashian back, which, like, bro, there's better ways to go about winning back your ex, you know? But does he really think that dissing her current boyfriend, who's not really done anything wrong, and, you know, say what you want about him, seems like an okay dude? Like, do you really think that's going to work? I don't know. This isn't middle school or high school where you can, like, diss someone and get, like, props for it.
Yeah. You know, it was funny, like, Kanye's girl, Julia Fox, right? Like, I was thinking, like, hold on. Like, what does she think of this? Like, she's sitting there while her man is, like, on Instagram basically begging for his wife back. And she's just, like, chilling there, like, watching this whole thing. Like, she has no thoughts about this. Like, I just thought,
I mean, they broke up, right? I don't know if you saw that. They broke up, so it's like ended, and I think that just shows that it never was a real thing anyway.
Oh,
she was using him, right? I mean, she was using him, or like he was like, yo, like, date me for like 3 weeks and I'll make you super famous, and you
definitely
keep me in the news or whatever and make Kim Kardashian jealous. I don't know. Absolutely ridiculous, the whole story. I'm wondering what our readers, I mean, not our readers, our listeners think about this, and whether this is like the, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back for you in terms of protecting Kanye. Because for me, like, I appreciate his designs, you know, some of his music still, and I can separate kind of the art from the artist. But with this, I'm just like, man, there's no way, just looking at this situation, to defend him, because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, man. It was funny because didn't he say he was going to not touch his phone until the album dropped? And he's been doing exactly the opposite.
I mean, maybe he's doing everything, like, dictating stuff to his personal assistant. Maybe he technically hasn't touched his phone.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? Knowing Kanye, though, like, the fact that he has his album dropping in a couple weeks, I wouldn't be surprised if this whole thing is just a big publicity thing just to, like, get more listeners on his album, just to, like, put more eyes on his upcoming Yeezys. You know, like, it's Kanye, man. He's so good at doing this, of getting everyone to talk about him, that, like, I kind of feel like it's just all a big publicity thing.
Oh, dude, 100%. I mean, that's Kanye's MO, right? That's what he does. But yeah, I guess enough about Kanye. I know you wanted to talk quickly about the Union Dunk release. Did you get those in the end?
No. So the Union Dunks were released. They released 9 a.m. Pacific time on Friday. So the 11th of February, 9 a.m. Pacific time was 6 p.m. Berlin time. And my flight was at 6:20. So I was literally, like, on the plane. Like, I was boarding the plane as it happened. And I tried to cop, and I was super fast. Like, as soon as it hit six, I tried to cop, and I answered the question. The question was, what is the color of a yellow taxi cab? So it was super easy, right? And I answered the question, and I did that super fast. And then the website just crashed on me. And, like, I tried refreshing, it crashed. And then it sent me back to the question. And then I had to answer the question again. And next thing I know, it said I was in the queue. I had to wait 25 minutes, and then it would be my turn. And it sold out apparently in like the first 2 minutes. And from what I saw just in my sneaker Discord groups, the release was completely eaten by bots. Specifically, there's like a bot called the Rat Bot. This particular bot pretty much took 90% of the stock. So unfortunately,
like, it can answer the question or what?
Yeah, like, so apparently this bot can not only answer the question, it can also solve the H captcha, you know, the captcha where you have to, like, draw a square around an object. Like, it could apparently do that too. So it pretty much ate up all of the stock, and yeah, people were pretty upset. It was a terrible release, man. Terrible, terrible release. Bots took everything, and I don't know if this particular colorway is going to re-release the pistachio colorway. That was the best one, I thought, out of the three. Very, very disappointing release. I hope Union just cancels all of the orders and just, like, re-releases it, because that was pretty sad. That was a pretty shitty release.
Yeah, I think, I mean, who knows? I mean, some retailers, some brands will do it, but it's also a lot of effort on their part, right? Because they have to put everything back online. They have to go through all of the release mechanisms. And if they're not going to update anything, then the same is going to happen again and again and again, right? So it costs time, it costs money. And in the end, I think a lot of retailers are just happy that it's sold out and they can be done with the release, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but whatever. I mean, I didn't even really think it was that great of a sneaker to begin with, to be honest. Like, it's, I don't really like the netting on it. Although, like, we found out now that you can actually remove that netting and it's supposed to have some nice smooth leather underneath. But I mean, it's a bit overhyped for me. Maybe I'm just over the Dunks at this point, but yeah, I wasn't too hurt about missing out on it.
Yeah, I feel you. I mean, I totally missed that release as well. But also it wouldn't have been a release that I would have wanted to buy. You know what I mean? If I had been like in tune with it, because like you, I didn't really like the materials. And even if like you can remove the top and there's leather underneath, I don't know. There's been enough of those kind of sneakers that I don't really need another one of those in my rotation.
Yeah, I feel you. So before we move on to latest pickups, I think we should tell the audience about some big news, man. Some big news in your life. Want to announce, first of all, to all of the female listeners on this show, our man Fobs is officially off the market. Like, he is no longer a bachelor. Some big news happened. Tell the people.
Yeah, I got engaged. I got down on one knee, you know, obviously made sure I wasn't creasing my Jordans.
That's what the people want to know. People want to know, what sneaker were you wearing when you went down on one knee?
I wasn't wearing any because I did it at home. So actually, I forget if I was wearing socks or not at all, but I obviously made sure not to. I thought about it for a second. I was like, even if I do it at home, like, should I put on a special pair of shoes or like break out the ones that I wanted to undead stock for a while? And then I was like, nah, you know, to be honest, that's pretty corny. Like, it's more about the moment, more about myself and my fiance, and it feels weird saying that, so I think I'm just gonna keep saying partner. But I got engaged a couple weeks ago, and I'm super super happy, looking forward to the drama and stress of planning a wedding whenever it's next possible. I think we're going to wait a while when, you know, Corona kind of dies down.
Next year, maybe?
Yeah, next year, maybe the year after, depending. But like, yeah, something like that. I think when there's more time and we have time to, like, you know, budget for it and all that kind of stuff, because obviously weddings, depending on how many people you invite, can become quite expensive. I've heard from some of my friends who got married recently. A lot of them are like, don't do what I did, man. Don't do a big wedding. It's not worth the money. we'll see. But I think it was really nice. And obviously she said yes, right? So I'm super happy. So that was my big pickup, was copping myself a wifey.
You copped yourself a wife. You can't get a bigger pickup than that, man. So yeah, big time congratulations, man. It's been a big year for you, man. New job, new apartment, new wife.
Yeah, it's a lot of things are falling into place at the moment. I think 2022, I know a lot of people say like, oh, this year's gonna be my year, but I think it's already been my year, you know? Yeah. Like, it so much shit can happen in the next 10 months, and I'll still say, you know what, 2022 overall was a good year for me.
Oh yeah, it can't be more your year. It's been a big year for you, man. Congrats for sure.
Thank you. What about you pick up anything?
Yeah, actually I did. I picked up quite a few, but I think I'll probably save some for the next pod, because like, I feel like there's just too many to talk about all in this one pod. But first of all, I picked up a pair of Vans. I told you guys this is gonna be the year that I stopped just buying Jordans and Adidas. So I got myself the Notra collab with Vans. I've been meaning to get this pair for like a few years now. They already released a collab just on the same silhouette a couple of years ago, and I kept seeing pictures of that shoe, especially on like Hidden New York, and I just thought they looked so dope for a pair of Vans. So I managed to actually get two of the colorways, the brown colorway, also known as the espresso, and the matcha or the green pair. And damn, I think they're my favorite pickup so far this year. It's such a nice looking shoe. And the colorways of both of these colors, honestly, can't even say one is better than the other. They're just both really, really nice. Really
those
nice.
Those are the ones with the handshake logo, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like the,
I really like that logo.
The Van stripe has been replaced with the Notra handshake logo. Yeah, they look hella dope. The review of those shoes should be dropping probably later today. So like yesterday, if you're listening to the pod. guys, so that was my first pickup. Very happy with them. Also just got the Aimé Leon Dore 993s. I don't know what's the official colorway called, but the blue and the, is it called the taupe colorway?
I don't know what the official name is. I would call them like the plum colorway, because it's a bit like a plummy colorway, right? I don't know.
So it's not the beef and broccoli one. It's the other one. I don't know the official name. I think it's called the taupe something. But anyways, whatever. I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. So basically, this sneaker had like a European release, I guess, in the last week. A lot of stores had raffles for them. I took L's on every raffle, but I managed to cop them when they dropped on the Kith website. And I actually didn't cop it for myself. I copped it for a friend of mine who is also a pretty big listener of the pod. Shout out to Ahmed. I managed to get it in his size. So he's pretty hyped. I got the shoes in hand today, and I'll say it again, like, this is probably the least impressed I am by an ALD collab. I think it's not just this pair, it's also the beef and broccoli pair. The colorways just didn't do it for me. I'm not a big fan of like that black base. I think it looks, I don't know, it looks, it doesn't look, it does, it's not, it doesn't feel like a cohesive shoe. The black base just for me throws it off. Also this silhouette, the 993s, it's kind of like, I don't like it as much as the 992s or the 990s. So yeah, I just overall kind of a skip for me. Not the best ALD collab. I don't know. What did you think of those 993s?
I like the 993, but I agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of black midsoles or kind of like a black base for a shoe that is not triple black. And I'm not a big fan of triple black anyway. So for me, the colorway is pretty much a miss. And I get why people like them. And I get why, you know, people went like a little bit wild over them when they first dropped at ALD exclusively. For me, not really a must have. I think there's going to be better colorways or better collaborations down the line.
Yeah, looking forward to those 650s whenever they drop. I should have pre-ordered them. I really regret not doing that. So a big miss for me when it comes to ALDs is that 993 collab. And then finally, I picked up the New Balance 2002R. I think this is called officially the Higher Learning Pack. So it's basically four pairs of New Balance 2002s that are all done in these really nice suede patterns, suede materials, I mean. And I managed to cop the green colorway. Of course, it's like, you can call it the Hidden New York special. It's got a beautiful green base, and the midsole is done in this like off-white color. And yeah, amazing, amazing quality on this pair, as to be expected, and probably the best pack of 2002s to release since the protection pack. And these have been flying, absolutely flying. Every single store that has dropped them in Europe so far, they've been selling out in minutes. I actually managed to cop these from Australia, and it took almost 3 weeks for the shoes to cross the oceans, I suppose, and get to Berlin. Very, very happy with these. I actually also want to cop another colorway from this pack, the like wine color, or like that vintage looking,
like the burgundy red, kind of the Bordeaux,
not the Bordeaux, the other one that I like, the, it's like there's a burgundy red one and then there's like a faded red one. I don't know what it's officially called, but that colorway is pretty unique looking, so I would like to get that. But those were my three big pickups: Notras, ALDs, and the Higher Learning Pack 2002Rs.
That's very, very solid. I can only echo your sentiments or your thoughts on the Higher Learning Pack. I think it's, you know, the 2002, obviously great shoe, New Balance, great brand. And the colorways on those, so, so nice. I really like that like dark burgundy red that I've seen pop up recently on Instagram. But honestly, like all, I think all colorways are definitely a hit.
Yep. Okay, so let's we didn't even tell the people what we're going to be talking about today. It's so we know that this coming weekend is NBA All-Star weekend, which is obviously pretty significant for the sport, and historically it has been pretty significant also for sneakers. There's the big sneaker brands, I would say specifically maybe Jordan brand, have really focused on dropping some pretty hype sneakers during this weekend. So that's going to be the main topic of today's pod. Fabian is going to go through a little bit about the history dating back to like the early 90s, how we have, or what kind of sneakers we have seen released, and some major events that have happened along this period. And I'll go through some of the more recent or some of the best sneaker releases during All-Star Weekend over the last 5 years or so. So yeah, let's Fabian, want to kick us off?
Yeah, so basically my trip down memory lane is going to focus on a specific moment of All-Star Weekend history, and kind of a moment that was significant for basketball reasons, but also for sneaker or footwear reasons. And I don't know how many of you were alive or even watching All-Star Weekends when this happened. I certainly wasn't. I was born 2 years after this. But my big topic today focuses on D Brown's 1991 dunk contest win. For those of you who don't know, D Brown was a rookie from the Boston Celtics, and he obviously in that year won the slam dunk contest, becoming the second rookie ever to win the contest. You know, back then it was, you know, some of the bigger players, the high flyers, some of the veterans were competing in the dunk contest, and it was relatively rare for a rookie to win a dunk contest. Nowadays you've got, you know, first year, second year players, high flyers, young athletic guys going head to head. So it's pretty normal for rookies or sophomores to win. But back in the early 90s, it was kind of unheard of. And you know, that's why D Brown became the second ever. Actually, the only rookie to win it before D Brown was Spud Webb, who is also the shortest player ever to win the dunk contest, standing at, I believe, 5'7" or 5'6", which is, I mean, you know, I'm 5'9", 5'10" on a good day. I think, Josh, what are you, like 6'2", 6'3"?
I'm 6'3".
6'3", like, you know, like that's a very respectable height, 6'3", especially even for a basketball player, right? That's like a nice, you know, like
I don't even think I'm big enough to be shooting guard, especially in today's NBA. I think I would probably be a point guard in the NBA.
Maybe you were like an early kind of early 90s shooting guard. But anyway, 6'3", respectable. You'd be like, okay, a dude who's that high or who's that tall can dunk. I don't know if you can dunk, Josh, but I don't know.
I used to be able to. I haven't tried, honestly, but I used to be able to dunk.
Okay, well, listen, if I with my 5'9", 5'9.5" can dunk, like I would be like, whoa, damn, that's impressive. So Spud Webb at 5'6", 5'7", winning a dunk contest is just next level. But anyway, so D Brown's win in 1991 was notable for two reasons. Number one, he won with one of the most iconic dunks of all time, and he had one of the most iconic pre-dunk rituals of all time. So this was in 1991, before kind of showmanship and you know, jumping over Kias or putting on a Superman outfit was even a thing, right? Like you went out there, you dunked, you tried to show off by pulling off a sick dunk. You weren't like bringing out an orchestra and having them sing Donda season 15 or whatever just to impress the judges. But D Brown, he was wearing a pair of Reebok Omnizone 2s, and he actually pumped up his shoes before his dunk. And for those of you who don't know, Reebok launched the Pump series of performance footwear in the late 80s. It started in basketball with Dominique Wilkins wearing the shoes, but it was also used in other sports such as tennis and later running. And one of the most famous sneakers ever to feature the technology was actually the Instapump Fury, which is designed by the legendary Stephen Smith, who now works for Yeezy. And, you know, the Instapump Fury has, you know, a cult following of its own.
In Japan, dude, in Japan, the Instapump is like, I would say, one of the most popular sneakers.
Yeah, there's collectors who have like hundreds of pairs, right? But back in 1991, pump was a relatively new technology. And as we know from Air and Michael Jordan, or, you know, Boost, if you want to go a little bit closer to our time period, most technologies or innovations need that kind of lifestyle or unbelievable athletic feat moment to go down in history. For MJ and Air, or Nike Air, it was just how good Jordan was as a basketball player, right? And the crazy things he did on the court, his domination. For Boost, it was Kanye West mostly wearing it on stage that propelled it into kind of that next level stardom. And for Pump, it was D Brown's 1991 slam dunk contest win. Basically, what happened was he pumped up his sneakers before his first dunk and the crowd went wild. But really, he was just using the sneakers as they were supposed to be used. The crowd loved it, though, and so he continued to do it before each of his dunks. On his final dunk, and I believe at this point, he had already won the dunk contest. I believe he was dunking against Sean Kemp. And
wait, Sean Kemp, like that like super tall dude from Space Jam?
Yeah, exactly. And he was a good dunker too in his time. And so I mean,
he was like 8 foot tall, man. He should be able to dunk. Oh, wait, never mind. No. I think that was Sean Bradley. Sean Kemp. Never mind. Sean Kemp
is like 6'6", 6'7", I think, something like that. Like one of those like high flying athletic kind of guys. And anyway, on his final dunk, Brown actually closed his eyes and then put his arm across his face to kind of show that he was doing a no look dunk. And that moment, paired with him pumping up his Reebok sneakers and then winning the dunk contest on that dunk, basically made him go down in history. I mean, he's said as well that that moment was probably the best moment of his entire career. And this is a guy who played several seasons in the NBA, right? So pointing to that moment is a big deal. And actually, speaking to, I think, the undefeated, Brown was saying, so I have a quote here for you guys. Quote, "I always planned on pumping them up before my first dunk. Not only did the pump fit the shoes to my feet, but it was such a cool idea that I wanted to see how the crowd would react when I brought it to life." And so, right? Sick quote. I have some more quotes coming up. Don't worry. But it was such a legendary moment because it established the pump as a must-have among the basketball crowd. The technology wasn't an instant hit, though, because the sneaker or the sneakers that featured Reebok Pump, they debuted in 1989. The first one was worn by Dominique Wilkins in the NBA. And then the next year, Reebok released the Omnizone, the Twilight Zone, and the SXT Pump, and later on released Michael Chiang's Court Victory Pump for tennis. But it wasn't until 1991, when D Brown actually pumped up his shoes at the All-Star weekend, that pump gained somewhat of a mainstream foothold in basketball. Back in the day, I was a huge fan of Reebok Pump before I even knew what it was or knew that I was a sneakerhead. I had a pair of tennis shoes. I loved Andy Roddick, and I think he was sponsored by Reebok at the time. And I used to play tennis maybe once, twice a week. And I used to pump up my shoes like nobody's business, you know, and I had no idea how they worked or if it was actually helping me, but I just loved that kind of gimmicky feel of like interacting with my shoes. And I think that played a big part as well in Pump's success, not just at the slam dunk contest, but later on in the line. It was, you know, it was all about an adjustable, customizable fit, which way back in the late 80s, early 90s is kind of crazy to think about. You know, it provided support around the ankle when other players were wearing like Converse Weapon, for example, right? Or, you know, the Air Jordan 1 or 2 back then, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, fantastic shoes, but not the height of innovation in any sense, right? And so the pump was really, it came at a time when footwear companies and brands were really pushing the envelope and really looking to make a difference and separate themselves from their competitors. And I would argue, honestly, that that was one of the golden eras of sneaker technology and performance, because nowadays all you do is you make it a little bit lighter and you have a robot who stitches the shoe better or makes like this crazy knitted fabric, and you know, you put like as many Zoom pods as you can into a running shoe. And sure, I'm not saying that's not innovation, but back then it was like you were starting from nothing, right? You had the Converse All-Stars, the Air Jordan ones, and then you were going into like, oh, let's like pump up the shoes. And no matter how gimmicky it was, it like sometimes it even worked.
And it definitely worked. I mean, dude, that pump thing was huge, man. Like people kind of made fun of it, like, okay, like nobody knew if it worked or not, but there was something cool about it. There was something cool about just pumping up your shoes, you know, and oh, now I'm gonna like, it would kind of give you some kind of confidence, like, oh yeah, like now I'm gonna hoop better, or exactly, or now I'm gonna like take over the day, you know, better.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that was like a good commercial.
You were showing your competitors, your opponents, basically like, listen,
I'm ready.
I'm bringing my A game now. Like you were just playing against my B game. I'm bringing my A game now. And so like a moment, that moment was really what put Pump on the map, and it later on led to, you know, players like Shaquille O'Neal, who is perhaps Reebok's biggest NBA star to date, alongside Allen Iverson. Right? I don't think there's any player that Reebok has signed before, after, since, that comes close to what those two players have achieved on the court. And Shaquille O'Neal was given his own signature sneaker called the Shaq Attack, which, you know, again, also a very famous, iconic sneaker that featured Pump technology in 1992, which was also the same year that the aforementioned Instapump Fury was released. So basically what I'm trying to say is that D Brown's moment of pumping up his shoes and then winning the dunk contest kind of launched Pump onto the scene and made it like a cool, viable product that then got attached to even bigger names than D Brown. And I actually wrote an article about this for High Snobiety a couple of years ago. And I was lucky enough to speak to someone from Reebok, actually Aaron Narloch, who is the head of their global archive. And basically what Aaron told me was, when D Brown took the moment to pump up his shoes before he completed his no look dunk, he did a few things. First, he captured the moment. Millions of viewers, all with their attention to their non-4K screens. Next, he demoed the tech. During this series of events, he's using the tech in the shoes. He's showing what it does and how to do it. It's the performance before the performance. And I love that part. Finally, he humanized himself in Reebok through the intensity of the moment, the performance, and the accolades after. So what Aaron was saying is that pumping up the shoes, winning the dunk contest, it was all part of this, like, not even bigger plan, because D Brown later on admitted that it was kind of all improvised, but this moment of multifaceted kind of happenings that all came to one and kind of blew up.
Imagine like that would kind of scare me if I was a Reebok exec. Like for a second I would be like hyped, like, oh no way, like he's showcasing the product, it's really cool. But then like imagine he just like missed the dunk right after.
that's true. I think people probably would have would have maybe just, it would have just been forgotten. Like, I think it would have been,
oh dude, the people would make fun of the pump after that. Like imagine like he would just miss his next three dunks, like then the pump would be a running joke, right? Like, oh, that's he true. Pumped his shoes and that's why he fucked up the dunk contest.
I think especially in today's day and age, right, with social media, it would have been turned into a meme, and I think the Reebok pump would have never recovered, and would have just, we would never have the Instapump Fury if that happened, you know what I mean?
Definitely, man.
So just to finish off kind of, I think if you're looking at the slam dunk contest, you've got like several moments, right? You've got Michael Jordan's free throw line dunk. You've got Dominique Wilkins with the windmill. You've got Vince Carter with his, you know, incredible athletic, jaw-dropping, gravity-defying Vince Carter stuff. I don't even know how you like describe it, right? He was just
greatest dunker of all time. No,
he made
question.
Dunking look easy,
no
right?
Question.
Like he made 360 between the legs look easy. Like it's just absolutely ridiculous. And yeah, so those moments kind of stick out, right? And I have to, like, in my opinion, you have to put D Brown's no look pump up the Reebok pump dunk up there with them. You know, it's one of the greatest moments of slam dunk history, and it's one of the moments that maybe not many people know about. Which is kind of why I wanted to highlight this today. I think next year, you know, we can maybe go into some of the more known, you know, like Michael Jordan's free throw line dunk, or, you know, some crazy 3-point shootout contest win. But I figured we'd kick off this series kind of with a unknown but super underrated historical thing. And so I'm just going to finish this off with one more quote from D. Brown himself, walking us through kind of his state of mind when he did this dunk. So again, talking to the undefeated, he said, "I was sitting, getting ready for my dunk. I was thinking about the different things going from my last dunk. I decided to close my eyes. No one had done it before. This was my last dunk of the contest. I think I'd won it already, but I didn't know that. I just had to do something signature just to make sure. I got the ball, stood up, and I decided I was going to close my eyes while I'm running. Organically, I jumped, closed my eyes, and thought, I got to put my hand over my eyes. As I moved my left arm for the dunk, my right arm kept going towards my head to make sure my eyes were closed and I couldn't see. I never practiced. I didn't know I was going to do it. I was hoping I didn't hit the side of the backboard. The rest is history." So I think that sums up just how like spontaneous it was, and how sometimes the most spontaneous moments just get the most hype and end up being the moments that we remember the longest, you know, and have the most significance as well.
That's actually crazy that he didn't even plan to do that. The no look dunk, like he just kind of thought of that on the spot and just went ahead and without even practicing it, just do it, because that's right? Crazy.
It makes it even more incredible and astonishing that he didn't miss, right? Like you said, like had he missed, it would have been like, oh, whatever, you know, but he was just like, ah, fuck it. Like, what am I going to do? I've got like 5 seconds to decide. Oh, I'm going to close my eyes. And then he did it. So, yeah, that was definitely one of my favorite historical slam dunk moments.
Vince Carter kind of like just killed the dunk contest, because like after that, it was just never the same. Like he just came there and just he cemented it as like, that's his contest for life. No one's going to top it. And yeah. No one has topped it, man. Vince Carter, legend, man, legend. But yeah, what an amazing, you know, advertisement for the Insta pump or the Reebok pump. And yeah, definitely was one of the main reasons why that shoe was so popular in the 90s and the early 2000s. But yeah, I'm going to go through some of the more recent releases that we've seen on All-Star Weekend. Especially Jordan Brand has been really using this weekend to release some very significant sneakers. So starting off with 2018, we saw the retro of the Jordan 3 Black Cement, which for a lot of Jordan collectors, not only is this like the best 3, it's the best Jordan period. It's arguably the best colorway of the Jordan 3. And I remember this 2018 release. I remember it very clearly because it was still to this day one of the only times I ever got like exclusive access to anything on the sneakers app. And I remember getting access to this, or it was like an early release or something. I just remember getting this shoe like a week before the release and wearing it and thinking like I was so cool for having a shoe super early.
Didn't they sit in Berlin as well in like a lot of stores?
They sat in Berlin. I remember they sat in Berlin. So I didn't feel cool at all like after they dropped. But for that 1 week before they dropped, I remember thinking like, oh man, I can't believe I got a shoe early. So that released All-Star Weekend 2018, and it was of course like a super super popular pair of shoes in the States, at least, not so popular in Europe. In 2019, this a sneaker released in 2019 that to this day I regret letting go of. This was the year I believe the All-Star Weekend was in Charlotte. And Jordan Brand released the Jordan 1 Turbo Green to mark the occasion, because the colors of that shoe matched the team colors of the Charlotte Hornets at the time, or actually still do. And man, that shoe is so nice. And I still think it's a top 5 Jordan 1 release of the last 5 years. Like, it's such a nice colorway and such a like different colorway from most of the releases. And I had that shoe. I got it also on the sneakers app and I ended up selling it. So definitely one of my big, big regrets. So that was the major release of 2019. 2020, however, 2020 was probably the biggest, I would say, like maybe even the best year for sneaker releases ever when it comes to All-Star Weekend. Because so we first of all had the Varsity Red Jordan 1s, and this was like the first 85 style Jordan 1 to release in a really long time, basically since 1985. And it was a pretty unique pair. It was kind of like a reverse bread colorway. And there was only 23,000 pairs worldwide for this release. And yeah, I actually got this pair from, I won like the Kicks raffle, I remember. This was a super, super nice colorway. The quality on the leather too was like some super premium leather. But there was some other sneakers that weekend that really stole the show. I thought the Varsity Reds would be like the main sneaker of the weekend, but there was a lot more that dropped that weekend. So we had the Joe Fresh Goods 992s that came out that weekend. And it was a release that just went super, super under the radar. And at the time, New Balance really didn't have all that much hype. They just had recently signed Kawhi Leonard, maybe like a few months earlier. And they were just starting to, you know, get a little bit of hype as a brand. They dropped these Joe Fresh Good 992s. You guys know which ones I'm talking about, like the crazy red and pink colors. And if you look at StockX right now, you can probably see how coveted that pair is. It's insane what they're going for right now. That was a super underrated release. And one of the better 992s to release.
I would say at this point, I think that is the best New Balance colorway of the since they've had that new hype. I would say since 2019, 2020, best New Balance colorway across any New Balance model, in my opinion. I think it's so, so good. I would put this up there with like my grails, but I think it's going for over €1,000 on StockX. So I'm never going to buy it, but it's just, I look at that and like, I think, you know, like, I mean, it's very like Valentine's Day as well a little bit, but it's just like that, the different shades of pink, the different shades of red, there's a bit of purple in there, the black and white midsole, such a good shoe.
I mean, it's super iconic. I don't know if I'd be able to wear it, to be honest. It's like, it's a very loud shoe. And like you said, it really gives me like major Valentine's Day vibes. But yeah, it definitely will go down as like one of the most grail worthy New Balances to release. And there were a couple more that released in 2020 as well. If you guys remember, the Yeezy Quantums released for the first time that weekend. And what was even more crazy about the shoe was the release itself. Kanye drove around the city of Chicago, and Chicago was where the All-Star game was held. Kanye drove around the city of Chicago in some ATVs. There was a bunch, and he was just giving them away to people on the street. And people were chasing after these ATVs, and it caused like all kinds of, I think, fights too among people. And this was obviously like a major release. The Quantums at the time had like so much hype, but the hype died on those really, really quick. Nowadays, like colorways don't even sell out. But my favorite release of that weekend, and to be honest, one of my favorite shoes ever, period, and a shoe I'm probably never going to sell from my personal collection, that was the Off-White Jordan 5s that dropped that same weekend. And it was very significant because I did say the All-Star game was held in Chicago, which was the hometown of the late Virgil Abloh. And so he knew he had to do something special. And yeah, he took a silhouette that just wasn't all that popular and just, I think, turned it into just an absolute work of art, a beautiful colorway, of course, inspired by the Metallic 5s. And rest is history. One of the best, if not the best, Jordan 5, I think, to ever release. So 2020 was the year for releases. I haven't even talked about the New Beginnings pack that also released in 2020, which was like a airship, I believe. And then like a just like a red and white Jordan 1. It came in a pack. I remember like the retail price was absurd. Like it was like $500 or something.
Like $500 or $600 for two pairs of shoes.
For two pairs of shoes, exactly. So that also released 2020. So yeah, 2020 has to go down as like probably the craziest weekend for sneaker releases. Last year, I was looking into it, but I couldn't really see a whole lot that released last year. Maybe I can just like quickly pull it up, but this year, there's some kind of significant releases, happening. We're going to be getting the Marina Blue Jordan 1, which we'll be releasing on the 16th, which is tomorrow. That's going to be releasing in the States. And I personally like this shoe. It's kind of like the Royal Ones, but like a reverse colorway. I've seen it in hand, and it's a pretty nice pair. But there's some other shoes dropping, these Jordan 3s. They're called the Cardinal 3s. Very clean colorway, just simple red and white. And it kind of looks almost like the colorway that Eminem wore in the Super Bowl. It kind of looks like his Eminem exclusive colorway. It's like red, white, and some hits of black in there as well. We're also going to be getting, this seems to be happening only in Australia, but we are probably going to be seeing the restock of the super popular 2002 Protection Pack. That's going to be happening February the 18th on the New Balance Australia website. And usually what we've seen with New Balance is, for some reason, a lot of these sneakers seem to be releasing first in Australia. Even the Higher Learning Pack, which just released, also first released in Australia. And now we're seeing the European and the American release. So I'm willing to bet that the Protection Pack will also be restocking worldwide. We don't know when, but Australia, February the 18th. And also some Yeezy news. We'll be seeing the Yeezy 500 Blush, which was the OG colorway of this model, we'll be seeing a restock of that this upcoming weekend. And also this all over red pair, the Yeezy 350 V, it's not a V2, I guess it's like a V3, the 350 compact. It's going to be like an all over red Yeezy. The only other time we've seen that recently is on that Vermilion pair, but this time we're going to be getting it on a 350. So I'm pretty sure these are going to sell out, and they're also going to be very limited. From what I've seen, the pair will only be available for like 1 hour or something on the Yeezy Supply website. So if you want to cop, you're going to have to be quick. So quite a lot of releases, but nothing, I wouldn't say anything like too crazy, like no big collabs dropping this weekend. So it's a pretty, I would say, like mellow All-Star weekend.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think the I don't know, the phase of like crazy All-Star weekend colorways and collaborations and stuff might be over, or at least I think due to Corona, with, you know, All-Star weekend and like a lot of that kind of stuff being more virtual than in the past. Obviously, people are back in stadiums now, which is nice. But the whole feeling of like being in the city and everything being, you know, wild, and there being huge like tents and activations and brands doing live events, I think that is going to take a while to come back, which is probably why we're not seeing so many big releases. I think it's impressive how many great releases 2020 had when you think about it. If you think about it across like different brands, I know that, you know, in the past, like I think it was 2011, like the Galaxy Foamposites dropped, and yes, you know, there's been like big releases in over time, and during specific years, there's been big like one or two releases. But 2020 had like a solid 4, 5, or 6 where you could make an argument for like, oh, people were lining up for those, or people had their eye on those for like months in advance, you know. Which is really cool to see.
I'm kind of disappointed this year though with the lack of like a themed release. Not usually, but at least what we've seen in 2019 and in 2020. And by the way, that sneaker that I missed that dropped in 2021, so last year, was the Jordan 1 University, Jordan 1 UNCs. That really, really clean colorway of the ones, that was the only significant shoe to drop last year. What we've seen, so 2019, we saw the Turbo Greens because the game was in Charlotte. 2020, we saw a bunch of Chicago-themed shoes because the game was in Chicago. This year, the All-Star Game is being held in Cleveland. So I thought at the very least, we might see some big-time, I don't know, LeBron, some super LeBron sneakers to drop. I see that there will be one pair of LeBrons dropping this year. Like the Big Bang, I believe it's called. This like all over orange and yellow pair. But besides that, not too many, you know, iconic LeBron sneakers dropping this weekend. So pretty disappointing in that aspect. So yeah, I mean, I already went through all the major sneakers dropping this weekend. Seems like we're not going to be getting any big collab. So it's kind of a miss of an All-Star weekend. So maybe once COVID, like you said, once COVID is gone, we'll start seeing those super hype type of releases outdoors. We might start seeing that next year.
Yeah, I mean, and you would have expected them to announce anything for this weekend by yesterday or today, right? Like they're not going to, there's not going to be a release that they announce, I don't know, in on Thursday for Friday or Saturday. So it looks like it's going to be relatively quiet on the All-Star weekend themed releases. And yeah, then there's a couple of other drops that, as Josh said, kind of don't really relate to All-Star weekend, but are worth kind of keeping an eye out on. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it in terms of upcoming releases, unless you have anything else.
Upcoming drops, we have, there's one that I forgot to mention that we'll be releasing All-Star weekend. I don't know if you've seen this, and I don't know what the official name is, but it's like this Jordan 1 Low Varsity Red, and it looks like a bread colorway. The bread lows, but with a platform sole.
Oh, I've seen those. They're terrible.
Yeah, I think they're called like the LV18 or something. I'm not exactly sure, but yeah, they're basically a Jordan 1 Low bread with this super high platform outsole. Yeah, I don't know what's the deal with these shoes, man. These look absolutely horrible.
I mean, again, that's just like them making sneakers for women, but like not really understanding what women want, or at least what women, female sneakerheads want, you know? I'm not saying that there's no women out there that would buy a pair of shoes like that, but I mean, isn't, you know, putting a platform on it a bit of a like an old trick now? You know what I mean? Like, oh, let's take the Forum and put a platform on it. Oh, let's take the Air Force One and put a platform on it. Let's put a platform on the Air Jordan One. Like, what, like, I don't know. It just seems a little lazy in my opinion. Obviously, you know, I'm not a woman, not a female sneakerhead. So maybe some of you listeners out there have other opinions, and obviously let us know, send me a DM or comment on our pictures on Instagram. But I just think that they could do a little bit more to make these sneakers appeal to women, you know?
Yeah. I think you're completely right there. This release seems kind of out of touch with what female sneakerheads are into right now. Yeah, pretty weird looking release. And definitely, I don't think the men are going to be going after this. So yeah, kind of definitely a big pass. Oh, the other upcoming sneaker worth mentioning, not All-Star weekend, but a week later, is the 350 V2 in the dazzling blue colorway. And this is a pair that, like, if it released a couple of years ago, like during 350 V2 hype cycle, I feel like this pair would be like, people would be talking about this as like a grail colorway, because it's a super clean pair, just black with a blue stripe. Looks very much like the 350 V2 Oreos and the what was the other one? The bread colorway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a super clean colorway. And yeah, I feel like it just arrived like 5 years too late, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of these 350s in terms of hype, right, released or arriving too late. I'm sure that there's still going to be people out there that like it. And, you know, like you said, if you think it's a cool colorway and you're not sure about the hype, who cares, you know, wear it. But I think in terms of, yeah, just hype strategy, a lot of these colorways, 2016, 2017, Fabian would have been like, damn, I want those.
Yeah,
but now not so much.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it for this episode. Yeah, we kind of got into All-Star Weekend, and there was plenty of news to talk about as well. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. It was great to be back. And also hope you guys enjoy All-Star Weekend. I want to give a quick shout out to Fred Van Vliet, who will be the only player representing the Toronto Raptors this All-Star Weekend. And he very much deserved that selection. So major shout out to Fred Van Vliet. And yeah, shout out to all of you guys for listening to the pod, and make sure you give it a rating on Spotify and Apple Music. It really does help us out, and just share it with your friends, anyone you know who would be into sneaker content. Definitely just share it with them. And really appreciate it. A shout out to all for all the support, guys. And I'm signing out.
Fobs. Yeah, and I'm also signing out. It was a pleasure having you back, Josh. Great episode, I think, and looking forward to the feedback. Let us know on Instagram, slide into the DMs, and talk to all of you in 2 weeks.
Peace.